Hello, hello. Welcome to the Galvanize and Restore podcast. I am your host, Jessica Concepcion, and I want to welcome you wherever you're sitting, wherever you find yourself today. Are you at the gym? Are you in the library? Should you be studying? Should you be working? Wherever you are, I hope you're having a good one. And today's podcast is going to be about how to grow in empathy. So the reason why I want to talk about this today is there's a reason why people don't help when they find someone in front of them that might need some assistance. Sometimes it's awkward, right? We all have been in a situation, possibly, where someone's in front of us and expressing themselves and either an anxious or wildly emotional way, and we're kind of just staring and we're like, what do I do? What do I say? Should I just excuse myself and kind of walk away? You know, it just depends on the relationship, I think, that you might have with that person. And the idea is that if we're able to be generally more empathetic, which could look like putting ourselves in their shoes, just understanding kind of where they're coming from, what they might be feeling at that time. It doesn't necessarily mean that we have to feel exactly the way they feel, but it's just about thinking about what they might be feeling, the distraught, you know. Or if you, for example, I was scrolling one time on Instagram and someone posted about a family member that they lost, and I had actually this past year lost someone, my grandma. So for me, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, like this is more, I guess, of sympathy, where it's you kind of have experienced something similar, so you want to reach out and you're energized to reach out to them because you understand what they are experiencing. So empathy is possibly actually when you haven't experienced what they have experienced, but emotionally you can connect with them and you kind of are there present with them. So why do we need empathy when we're talking about this crazy subject of human trafficking? Is because most of the time we feel that we don't have enough information to make a difference, and we don't feel like I can't say like a blanket statement like all the time we don't feel this way, but I think a lot of times people aren't willing to kind of do their part because they aren't really sure how. So that's why this podcast exists, right? We want to learn and we want to be able to have the information to make a difference. And starting at empathy, because if you're listening, for example, to someone's story who might be in front of you, maybe it's a YouTube video that you're watching, and you put yourself in their, you try to understand where they're coming from. Maybe their background is different than yours. Maybe it's a story of a girl who grew up in Asia, and you're like, well, I didn't grow up in Asia, so I can't really relate, you know, to growing up in like near the fishing docks, or, you know, growing up in a house that doesn't have a pool in the backyard. So empathy is really understanding where, like, being curious and understanding where that person is coming from. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have experienced what they experienced, such as, you know, the you know, when it comes to human trafficking, it could be, for example, the sexual exploitation or labor trafficking, where someone's taken advantage of. They don't, you know, they're working full time, maybe overtime. They're living in the place that they're working. If you haven't heard about labor trafficking, it's really pretty much modern day slavery, where you are working whatever kind of, it affects all the industries nowadays, and you're working these crazy hours and crazy conditions, and at the end of the day you're either getting paid so little that you can't even really do anything with the money that you're getting paid. Your documents, for example, passports, all these things are in the hands of the trafficker. And so labor trafficking is huge, and maybe in before Christmas we can do a couple episodes on labor trafficking in the different industries, because that is major. It's insane. I remember reading this one book about it, and one of the chapters was about labor trafficking, and it was about the fishing industry in Asia, and how some of the fishing companies, they'll, you know, hire these young boys to go out and do all the fishing on the boats, and they'll go out for weeks, and you know, they don't feed them sometimes. They, you know, and the atrocity of it is that sometimes if they're not willing to continue working, they'll throw them overboard, you know. So some of the young men, they die at sea. And when I was reading this, I was so horrified. I literally was I actually when I had read it, I was like, oh my gosh, I have to share this, you know. And I was making a video, I don't know where, I think I was gonna post it on Instagram or something. I was making a video, and I remember making the video and like tearing up and crying on camera, and I was like, what is this, like, why, you know, like, I don't know if somebody will listen to this, or, you know, the video. And because it's awkward, right? You're just listening to someone crying. But reading the book, it was just so horrifying. And so the labor trafficking is huge as well. I know we talk a lot about sexual abuse and sexual exploitation, but labor trafficking is really a big issue as well. And it's horrendous. It's horrible. And, you know, if you're an adult, or, you know, if you're, you know, 16 and over, I guess you could say, whenever people start working, I think the age now is like 15, right? When you can get a part-time job in high school. So whenever you start working, we already know some jobs are fun, sometimes they're not. When you start working full-time, you know, sometimes things can get kind of monotonous, and you just get used to it, and you're just like, oh, gotta go to work again today, and it's tiring, right? So, you know, as someone who works full time, you're going to work, you have a time, you leave, and then when you leave work, you get to do whatever you want, right? You get to either call a friend to go hang out, or, you know, catch up on a new show that you're watching, go watch a movie, go to a restaurant, go to happy hour, whatever it is that you're into, go play sports, go to the gym. If you're studying, you're gonna go to class, whatever it is. But you have your freedom there. And labor trafficking, I know this whole conversation kind of took a tangent, but labor trafficking is a crazy exception to the workplace, where you don't have any options to go home. It work stops when the manager tells you it stops. So you might be working 12 hours a day with 4 hours of sleep, and then they get you up again, and you're gonna work this crazy shift. And so I am definitely gonna do some episodes on labor trafficking, just because it is huge, and I think it'll be really interesting to see the different experiences that people are having right now in that sector, because it affects so many areas of so many different industries. And so, yes, let's talk about it. So back to the tema de hoy, which is empathy. So empathy, you know, if you have been on the other side of that conversation, where you want someone to validate your feelings, and you want someone to know how you're, you know, you want them to scream with you, you know, if you're upset at something, you're like, oh my gosh, can't you just, and then when you don't receive that empathy or you don't receive that validation, you just kind of, you get more upset because you're like, how come you don't understand what I'm feeling right now? And I think humanity is so funny. Like, I think it's crazy that we, you know, go through so many ups and downs. We want empathy, but we also have a hard time sometimes giving it if we don't really understand the person. So I did a little bit of research right now to understand how to grow in empathy and what that kind of looks like. So to be able to understand another person's feelings, we have to be able to read their facial expressions, their tone of voice, and their behavior. So that means observation. So you have to be present. If you're not looking at this person right, if you're kind of you know, if someone's talking to you and you're just kind of looking away, you are not reading their nonverbal cues at all. It's just, you know, you're just listening maybe to their voice and you're like, oh, this person's upsetting me right now just because they're so upset. But facial expression matters, tone of voice. You know, I think this is why we're so obsessed with like movies and TV shows, because you're not on the receiving end of whatever conversations that you're watching or whatever situation. You're just kind of like, I'm one of those people that when I'm watching a movie, I get really into it. I'm like at the edge of my seat and everything around me just it fades into the background. I'm just like hyper focused on the screen and I'm looking and I'm observing and I'm like in the show. But at the same time, so like as a movie watcher or whatever, I believe that's the way that we empathize, right? If you're watching a movie and you cry, or if you're watching a movie and you're freaking out and you're scared, or like you're yelling at the screen, like if you're watching a horror movie and you're like, don't go in, and you're yelling, that's the way we empathize, right? We put ourselves, literally, we're watching them and we're like, no, because you see more of the picture. So in the movies, like, you know, the directors and everything, they have a way of telling the story where you understand what's happening, unless it's like one of those crazy dramas where, you know, it's a mystery and no one knows what's happening until like the end of the story. But the directors of films, like they're artists, right? They really cultivate that storytelling ability. And so great movies really have strong elements in them, and that's not what we get when we're talking to someone in person. You know, not everyone knows how to tell a great story, right? Sometimes you're telling a story and you're just like looking at the person, or sorry, if you're listening to the story, you're just looking at the person and you're like, okay, can you get to the point, like, please, I gotta go do something, or I gotta get back to work, whatever it is. So we're not really, I would say not everyone's a great storyteller. So I think when it comes to empathizing, especially if someone's going through something very, painful, or expressing to you something that they've experienced or are experiencing, it's, in that moment, your body might not want to empathize with them. So I was actually reading a little, like when I say that, I mean, you know, you might start feeling moments of anxiety rising up in you, or worry in you, and you're just like, man, I just came from a great time with my friends and now I'm listening to like someone's story and it's just bringing me down. And at the end of the day, that person is just looking for some empathy, right? So I was reading online and there's this thing called other-oriented response. So an other-oriented response is a different way of looking at empathy. Instead of putting yourself in that person's shoes, it's more of thinking just about what that person might be experiencing. So it's not necessarily having to feel exactly what they feel, like sad or anything like that, but it's just cognitively recognizing that person's perspective and trying to read their emotions and trying to understand them in general. So being able to do an other oriented response most of the time creates like an empathetic concern, and then that empathetic concern is also known as compassion. So that emotional response you get from just the cognitive process of thinking about their what they might be experiencing is the emotion that triggers someone to help. So, you know, the type of emotion you need to actually take action is compassion. So compassion, it energizes you to be able to be like, okay, what can we do about this? Do you need some water? How are you feeling? Let's go take a seat. Let's go take a walk, you know, whatever it is. And then you, so simply understanding someone's situation is not enough, but we need that extra step of compassion, that emotion that triggers the helping behavior. So I thought that was really interesting. And some other things that can help to develop us as a culture to have more empathy, because that was something else I was reading. Empathy towards others actually helps in all spheres of life. It helps in personal relationships, such as dating relationships, your marriage. It helps with your coworkers. It helps with even government. It helps because you're making decisions based off of compassion that you feel towards others, based off of how you understand what someone else might be experiencing, what they're going through. So it's kind of like what I said earlier, you know, you might not relate to a child that grows up near a fishing dock, you know, in Asia, but you might, and because they didn't grow up with the same household things that you grew up with, but imagining yourself and what that person might experience based off of the different events in their life creates that empathy, because you're staying curious with the world around you. You don't box yourself in to your own point of view or your own experience. So you're not limited just by what you've experienced, but now you're opening your thoughts up to, hey, what might this person have experienced, you know? So some of the tips I found about how to cultivate this is developing your curiosity. So asking questions, wandering more, being more available and thoughtful, stepping out of your comfort zone. So this could be even physically, like traveling to a new place. A lot of people apparently aren't traveler. I mean, nowadays I feel like everyone's traveling. If you go on Instagram, there's just people posting all over the place, you know, traveling to Jamaica, I'm traveling to Hawaii, I'm traveling to Paris, and beautiful pictures like all around. And those kind of things, like stepping out of your comfort zone, can mean being in situations where you need to ask for help. For example, like if you're in a new city and you're like, oh my gosh, please help me, I need directions, or you're completely lost. So being out of your comfort zone can also be, you know, professionally, if you're doing something new and different, it could mean asking someone out. If you're you've been curious about this person, but you're afraid, and so it's like putting yourself out there, right? And it's also getting out of your comfort zone can risk failure. So even if, for example, you want to be compassionate with someone and you fail, and it might lead you feeling like a little bit helpless, or like you yourself feeling kind of like you tried your best but it didn't work out. So that actually cultivates humility in us, because failure helps us to realize that, you know, you're kind of not all that you thought you were, but, you know, it's an experience that makes you stronger. And humility is something that cultivates empathy, because you start realizing that that you're not the center, I guess, of the world. You're not the whole world, and everything doesn't revolve around you. There's other factors happening all around us to consider. So I think stepping out of your comfort zone every once in a while, once a week, these things help cultivate empathy. Also receiving feedback. So if you're in a good community, like with friends, if you're in a sports club, or married, or your spouse, your boyfriend, whoever it is, your girlfriend, being able to be open to feedback. So asking them once in a while, like, hey, like, what did you think about my food I cooked last night? Or what do you think about how I talk to you? Or how do you think about my new project that I'm working on? Asking coworkers, asking your supervisor for feedback. If you create an atmosphere around you that allows that feedback space, I think it opens, it really does. I've tried this with friends, and like, ooh, you get that feedback and you're like, you know, sometimes it kind of hurts because they're saying something to you that you don't recognize, right? That you have kind of like a blinder to, because I think for most people, everyone just assumes like, oh, I'm pretty good. Or if you're insecure, you're like, oh my God, I'm the worst. So it's like, sometimes it works both ways, right? If you're really confident and you ask for feedback, someone might tell you something that kind of lures your, takes you off that high horse you're on, and you realize, oh, there are certain things I could work on, you know? Or if you're insecure and you ask for feedback, someone might actually tell you something that you didn't even know you're good at, or something, you know, they'll compliment you and they'll say, oh my gosh, you're so great at this, or I picture you doing this with your life, or, you know, whatever feedback it is, you know, whether positive or negative. You know, receiving feedback is receiving someone's experience of you. They're receiving how they're experiencing you. So that's why it's connected to empathy, because you're able now, opening a door to seeing someone else's point of view of the world and of yourself. And then it creates a if the ideas, for example, how you see yourself and how someone else sees you don't match, then you're able to kind of analyze, like, hey, like, why doesn't it match, or what's going on, what is it that I'm doing that, you know, is creating this this gap, right? Or the feedback can help push you and forward and sharpen your skills as well. So another thing is examine your biases. How do you pronounce it? Biases, right? So you're examining your biases. So that is huge when it comes to empathy, because so much so we have, you know, for the most part, people always hang out with those who are similar to themselves. And so in those kind of spheres, we can be affirming one another's belief systems, and when we do that, sometimes we don't leave ourselves open to how other people see the world. So, or also, you possibly have grown up with certain biases in regards to different areas of life, such as like a man's role in the household, a woman's role in the household, or government's role in society, so many things like that. And we can do that almost daily and start kind of questioning certain things. And this is not to say throw away your values, throw away what you believe, nothing like that at all. It's just more of evaluating freely and being open to question, because biases are more of those that are rooted in right and wrong, things that we think are appropriate, things that we think are not appropriate. So the right and wrong, sometimes we connect it to, like, for example, if you're going to church, some churches allow people to wear pants and some churches say no, you're only allowed to wear dresses. Or some churches want everyone to wear suits and ties and dress all fancy, and then some churches are like, hey, you can come in shorts and a t-shirt and that's okay. So those are biases, right? You know, you're those are certain things that it's particular to a certain environment, and at the end of the day, it's up to you to decide like what's right and what's wrong. But some of those things are things that can be developed from your youth and how you grew up in the home. So that's why it's important to examine them. So I'm not saying change all of them, but examining them just gives you that ability to kind of open the door and be like, okay, am I doing this right? A big topic of this is, for example, in the Christian circles, you might, some Christians, at least for me growing up, some Christians would drink and some Christians would not drink. And it was like this huge thing because, for example, my sister, when she went to study abroad in Paris for a semester, she went into one of the churches, and in France, you know, wine is a huge thing. So everybody was drinking in church, and they all, most of them, they had wine. They were, you know, it wasn't like drinking like, hey, like how the Americans do. It was just more like casual, like one glass of wine or something. And for her, it was like such a shocker. It was funny because we talked about this, but she was like, oh my gosh, you know, like everybody was drinking, and it wasn't like a big deal. But I remember growing up in a Spanish Christian church in Florida, and drinking wasn't really viewed as something that we do in a social setting. It was, I guess it was kind of like an adult thing, even though we were probably maybe like, I was like 19 or something when I left that church. But I just remember always thinking that drinking was something really, really bad. But I think it's just because in America, drinking is viewed in such a like party, you know, like everyone drinks at a party and you're going crazy, and you know, you just have like that teenage party in a house kind of vibe, and that's kind of the imagery that comes to my mind. So that's kind of like what I associated when someone was like, oh, do you want to drink? Or you know, I guess in a club and all that. So I know even still, you know, how someone drinks, I mean, whether someone chooses to drink or not drink, like even in the Bible there's a verse that talks about this and says, you know, just keep it between you and God what you think about that. And it's crazy, it even says in the Bible, like, just keep it between you and God, because you can condemn yourself by what you stand for or something like that. So it's really interesting. So it's like even in the Bible there's people did things differently. Some people would for example, like the Christian Jewish people or Jews for Jesus, kind of the first apostles, right? Peter, God gave him like a revelation about being able to eat certain meats, and that had to be a process for him to understand that, okay, I can eat every kind of meat because God said he created everything and everything's good. So that was like a bias that he was living with, right? And then God kind of like broke it down. So evaluation of examining biases is not something that should change the foundation of your morals, but I think it's just more about like different habits or like different things that we really like hold on to dearly because we're like, oh my God, this is the right thing to do, and it might not necessarily be true, right? Another one is walking in the shoes of others. So that one is just putting yourself right in someone else's shoes, or actually volunteering, possibly, you know, going out of your way to spend some time with people you don't normally spend time with, and being open to listening, being present, trying to understand. And you know, it's funny because I think when we do spend quality time with people who are not like us, we kind of get uncomfortable, I guess, depending on who you are, if you're really open to it or not. I feel like most Americans perceive themselves as really open, but that's just dependent on, I guess, where you are in the country as well. There's a lot of there's a red state, there's blue states, there's, you know, the countryside, then there's a city side. Like everyone has every culture, there's like subcultures all around the country, and yet, you know, Americans live Americans traveling outside of America Sometimes I have heard from people outside of, you know, they say Americans are like super loud and like we're very like, we're not really aware of our surroundings sometimes in regards to just like observing the different cultures around us and submitting to the culture. We just kind of bring our culture with us, like our loudness, and you know, we're like, go America, and you know, and we kind of take that in different places. So it's just like a kind of like a reputation that Americans have around the world sometimes. I remember being in Ecuador actually, and we were I was 16 and we were I don't remember what city we were in, and we were like in this van, and the van actually had like dust on the back, and these little kids like came up to the van and like wrote on our car like, go home Americans. And I was like, ah, oh, I'm Ecuadorian too, you know. I was like, that's not nice, but I guess they could tell we're Americans for some reason. That's what I'm trying to say, you know. Americans, like, you know, whether you're, it doesn't even, you don't have to be American, you know, you can be from a certain place and people can hear your accent, you know. If you hear someone that has an accent, you're like, huh, are you from South Africa, are you from the UK, are you from Australia, you know. You just kind of, at least for me, South Africa and the UK kind of sound similar together. But anyways, so walking in other people's shoes, so it's basically, you know, being open to other people's experiences. And the last one is difficult and respectful conversations. So why does that create more empathy? It's because, again, you're just sharing ideas, you're sharing what you think about certain topics, and at sometimes you might not agree, but hearing someone else's point of view really does, you know, open up new ways of seeing things and understanding someone else's point of view and why they feel a certain way. A lot of times I feel we're easily able to shut people down and say, oh, you shouldn't feel that way, or why do you think that, and you just kind of get upset, and for whatever reason, because, you know, if you're so stuck on like being right, then you're always going to find an argument for why the other person's wrong. So I think empathy just helps with being able to take information and understand where someone's coming from. And so this conversation is huge because we do need empathy to be able to get to compassion and to be able to have that emotional response so that we can take action and be energized to actually do something. So one of the quote was, simply understanding is not enough. Emotion energizes me. And that was like from an article I was reading earlier. And so I love it. I think it's so important. And let me know your feedback on this. Comment on Instagram, Gal Restore. It's GalReStore. And I will let you know further thoughts. Message me. I wanna hear maybe even a story of how you're growing in empathy. Like, what are you doing? Maybe, you know, reading more fiction books. I heard that's a really good way of growing in empathy, because you're literally reading someone's thoughts sometimes, or reading different things a character might be going through. And lastly, I have some updates in regards to, since it's October right now in this recording, it's October 2nd. So there's actually a couple of laws in Florida that have come into place, in that the governor and a couple of state officials have enacted, and they're really good, pretty good at really narrowing the benefits for survivors of trafficking, and also narrowing down to specific laws that are going to help put traffickers away in jail. So one of the laws, it's HB 1565, and this law strengthens penalties for human traffickers who possess or discharge a firearm during their crime. So basically it's setting a mandatory sentence for those who are found to discharge a firearm when they are in the midst of trafficking. And there is a couple other information on that one, but it was like about underage. I wasn't 100% sure on that. So the overall thing though is the penalties. So mandatory penalties for those who are carrying a firearm or are using it during the crime. I thought that one was pretty intense, you know, like I think firearms has been a huge debate in the last couple of years, especially in 2020, and because of a lot of the mass shootings that we've been having in America. So another law is SB 7064, and I encourage you to look these up and read them. You know, that's something new. I was just on the page for the floridasenate.gov, and it's cool because you can actually look up a lot of how they make the law and like the processes that each bill is going through, and just being informed is really awesome. So the other one is SB 7064. It establishes a civil action against traffickers and allows victims to recover damages from adult entertainment establishment. This one also provides restitution, which is when you're getting paid for a crime that was acted against you. And so they're able to get restitution from their traffickers through the seized property from the traffickers. So, you know, traffickers make so much money off of the people that they're either, you know, they're using, and they, you know, they buy their property, they buy stuff with all the money that they have. So if it's confiscated, then through that property, they're able to provide some restitution to those who have been trafficked. SB 1690, it's a human trafficking awareness program for foster homes to have age-appropriate programming that'll help kids identify the signs and the dangers of human trafficking. So I like that one a lot because it's focused on prevention. You know, your girl is all about prevention, okay? So prevention is super important because educating young adults gives them the tools to be able to make changes and make certain decisions in those crazy moments where, you know, because of what they know, they might have like a gut reaction to something and feel that something's wrong and make a difference, make a change to, for example, instead of meeting up with someone they met online, they might say, hey, I don't think this is a good idea, never mind. And that could save someone's life, you know, that can save years of trauma on that person's life. And we know that children in foster care, they are more prone to have vulnerabilities because of just all their experiences growing up. And so this is a huge bill. Hopefully it's, you know, these bills all have come into play, but sometimes it takes time for them to be like, for example, if someone's creating a program to give to the foster homes, it might take time to develop those programs or to implement that. So prayers on that, you know, this is a great advancements on and what we need to be seeing. You know, it's like crazy that these are laws that just got into play right now in October 2023. Amazing. And then lastly, this law is something that can be okay, I don't know what you're gonna think about this, but Governor Ron DeSantis provided a bill allowing for the death penalty for child rapists. So anyone who is involved in the sexual battery of a person under the age of 12. So right now, they're saying that this new bill possibly might be headed to the Supreme Court because the Supreme Court has a bill or like a law in place in regards to this area when it comes to child rapists. So basically the Supreme Court law was that the death penalty could not be given to a pedophile if the child survives. So from what I read, basically the reason the Supreme Court made it that way was because there was a group of social workers who kind of provided insight and suggested that if they gave the death penalty to those who raped a child, then and the without the child dying, they don't get the death penalty. So like basically they said if you give the death penalty, you put it on the table for all child rapists, the social workers basically said it would create a situation where people were more willing to kill their victims. And I guess that's to prevent the crime from being found out in the first place, because I guess if the child's alive, then they can talk. So if a child's dead, then they don't have the ability to even bring up what happened. So that's kind of a crazy thought. So hopefully that is something that is being brought to the Supreme Court so they can kind of make a federal decision, or you know, a state decision on that. It's pretty crazy. I've been in conversations where people do agree on this. I don't know where you stand on the death penalty. It's a really strong thing, but I also think that being a child rapist, that is a decision that you're making, you know, to do that. And if the law is, if this is the penalty for it, then you know, you're making that decision willing and knowing. And it's also something where the law is recognizing how cruel and evil this thing is. So yes, that's pretty heavy one to leave this to leave you with. I'm sorry we had to go there. But it's a, you know, if you didn't know, now you know. that is something that's happening as well. And please write to me on Instagram. Let me know your thoughts on what you think of these last four laws that just are happening in Florida. And let me know about what you think about empathy. All right, so look out for the next podcast on Monday. Every Monday, tune in. Galvanize and Restore. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do. Follow us on Instagram as well. GALRESTORE. I don't know why it feels like it's spelled so long. And yeah, I hope you're having a great rest of your evening or morning, wherever you're, you know, tuning in from. And share this podcast with a friend so they can also grow in empathy, and you guys can just be an amazing, you know, group of people just doing amazing things with your life. And I hope you're, you know, wherever you find yourself in your experience of life right now and whatever season you're in, I hope it's a wonderful one. I hope you have friends and community or relationships that are genuine and beautiful in your life. And I hope you're blessed, you know. Have a great rest of your time, all right? Bye.